Welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to be talking about the story everybody's talking about, which is the flaw in all the processors. Now, what is today's date?
Today is January 6th.
So the reason why we want people to know when we're recording this is because this is kind of time-sensitive information. We're recording this on the 6th. New information may come out. Every day there's always something new about this particular flaw.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do here is figure out what's really going on. Because when I first heard about this, my stress level kind of was like, wait a minute, what's this all about? Is it real? And then all of a sudden I started reading about this thing and it's like, whoa, stress level's high. And then as I learned more about this, as I talked to people who are in security, because I have a bunch of security friends who look at this kind of stuff for a living, my stress level started to come down. And then we watched the SANS webinar with Jake Williams.
Right. Well, what basically is, as we were trying to figure out what it was and how what impact it was going to have on Section 9 and then, you know, ultimately your job as well, we started realizing there wasn't a lot of information out there. So we ended up going to SANS and watching a webinar by Jake Williams. And actually, it was really nice. He had a really nice chart explaining the difference between one and the other. And we'll put that in the show notes, but we're going to go over that right now.
Yeah. And first thing I want to say here is that when something like this happens, what we're trying to do here is figure out what is the relevant information. How does this apply to us here at Section 9? Or how does this apply to the organizations that we work for? And I think that's a big thing. You don't want to panic. That's number one. And again, you want to make sure you take the relevant information to be able to make the right decisions for your organization. And we're trying to make the right decisions for Section 9.
And what is hard about the don't panic bit is that, and you explained this to me because I was like, oh my God, if I was in security, I will be panicking up and down. But you were right. I mean, when you don't have enough information, you don't want to just go ahead and patch everything, do a hasty move, and then take the network down. So basically, we regrouped and we decided to do the research before reporting on this. So again, the chart that Jake had was really good. What he basically did, he laid down 6 items and then just compared Meltdown to Spectre on them. The first one, for example, it allows kernel memory to be read. That is a yes for Meltdown, but a no for Spectre.
And this was big. I didn't know that there was a difference here. I thought these two things did the same thing.
Right.
And we'll go over the details later on.
Right. The second one was patched with Kaiser and KPTI. It was a yes for Meltdown and a no for Spectre again.
And I thought that initially I thought that this patch was only for Meltdown.
Right.
And then some reports said it was a patch for both. So I was kind of confused. So now we know for sure the patch is only for Meltdown.
Right. The third item was leaks arbitrary user memory. It was yes for Meltdown and yes also for Spectre. The fourth item was could be executed remotely. For Meltdown, it was sometimes. For Spectre, definitely. And that's one of the things that we're going to get into lately.
Yeah, this was kind of confusing, but we'll get into it in a minute.
Right. Let's see. The fifth one, most likely to impact. For Meltdown, it was kernel integrity. And for Spectre, it was browse memory.
Yeah, so we're talking about kernel space memory and then your browser.
Right. And then the sixth one was practical attacks against. For Meltdown, it was against Intel. For Spectre, it was Intel, AMD, and ARM. So let's take Meltdown, for example, okay? It could ID password hashes. It could execute Mimikatz-like attacks on Windows. It could find your private keys. But the main problem was allowing privilege escalation.
Right. So these are examples of what an attacker could do if they were able to get malicious code onto your system.
Right.
Now, one of the things that should be pointed out here is that for the most part, the person who's going to do the attack, the hacker, they have to have some way of getting the code onto your system. And there are special cases where they might be able to do something remote, but for the most part, they have to be local on your system. So let's look at Spectre.
So Spectre was a little different because Spectre can only read memory from the current process, not the actual kernel memory like Meltdown can. So it could use your browser process to remotely use Java to run code and hijack your browser session. Another thing that it could do is it could read your browser key and maybe other information in the browser that you really wouldn't want somebody to read.
Yeah, and this is just an example of how an attacker might get into your system using Spectre. So Spectre can use any process. It doesn't have to be the browser, but this is one way an attacker might use it. They create some code or Java code, and then you somehow access that Java code, maybe on a website, someplace on the internet, and then that executes inside your browser, accesses information that it should not have access to.
Correct.
Like a session key. Right. So for example, if you're logged into Google or your bank account, there's a session key for that. And in this particular case, Spectre allows the Java code to access that information. And then that's how the hacker would hijack your session by using your session key.
Correct. So the next thing that we did was, okay, so what are the things, what are the protections that we think that are working that don't work for this kind of thing?
Right. So let's go over this, and you have to explain this to me because I always forget what this is, what this actually stands for. We have ASLR and KASLR.
Right, and that was the address space layout randomizing.
Right. So what they're trying to do here is both Spectre and Meltdown. These are vulnerabilities that have to do with memory. So when you're accessing memory, you need to know what the address space is for the memory, because it's like saying you know somebody's phone number, or you know some address to somebody's house or something like that, or their email address. So inside the system, you have all this memory, and we don't really understand how that works. I mean, they were talking about that in the webinar, and it was just way over our heads. But essentially what you're trying to do is access the memory addresses of things you should not have access to.
Correct.
And so this randomization process is supposed to make it more difficult to see all of that.
Right, because it randomizes, but the problem is it only does 40 bytes at a time, right?
Well, that's not the only thing, because part of the problem is that the flaw makes this irrelevant. The
Correct.
40 bits doesn't matter.
Well, and that's what I was saying.
Well, but ASLR does work. Mm-hmm. It's just that the flaw gets rid of all of that.
Right. So when you have ASLR and KASLR, which is the kernel, you know, same of that, both are supposed to protect the memory. But in this case, with this particular vulnerability, they don't. So the next thing that we kind of wanted to do was like, okay, how does this impact Section 9? And what are some of the things that we can do to protect ourselves, you know, within the small bit of information that is out there? So for Meltdown, we can apply operating system patches. You know, for Spectre, we can, and one of the recommendations was log out of your browser session. When you log out, that key, you know, gets deleted, so they don't have access to it. And then do your browser updates. And one of the things that Jake had in his, in the webinar, and I think that people can listen to the webinar for free, correct?
Yeah, you do have to have an account on their website, but I think you can get that for free. You don't have to pay anything for that. You just log in and get the account.
Well, we're going to put the link of the webinar in there and you guys can take a look at it. But one of the things that he recommended that on Chrome, you can enable what they call site isolation. And we'll also put the little bit.ly thing, you know, the little address in there for you guys to look at. But this basically causes Chrome to load each site into its own process. So even if the same origin policy is bypassed, you can steal data from another site. And it's not 100% safe, but it, you know, because it's still things could still be in memory, but it helps.
Yeah. And this is where I think even the researchers, people like Jake Williams, is still kind of hesitant to say certain protections will work because it's too early to tell. There may be other things that researchers figure out how to do later on.
Well, and I like that about the webinar that he said, you know, most likely this will not happen, like when he was talking about VMware or the virtualization, and, you know, but he wasn't willing to say 100% because, again, he realizes there isn't enough information.
Right. He was trying to say that you should be safe if you have a VMware virtual machine, mm-hmm. that you can't do the attack on that kind of a machine. But he wasn't willing to say you will never be able to do that.
Correct.
It just seems like now you probably can't, but maybe in the future, somebody will figure out how to do that.
So again, let's go back how that affects us. You know, in Section 9, we have a couple of people that have legacy equipment that cannot be patched. So we're going to be affected by both Meltdown and Spectre when it comes to that.
Right. And these are iPads in this particular case, right. Older iPads that don't have the iOS updates.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think about those legacy items that you have, those legacy systems that can't be patched. And how important are those systems? What kind of data do they access? Is it top secret information? If it is, then you may want to get rid of those systems and get new ones that do have the ability to be patched.
Right. Our second concern was our cloud services, because we're not Amazon, Google, or Windows. So, you know, AWS, Azure, everything, they had those patched before any of this came out. But on smaller companies like what we use, DigitalOcean, you know, they didn't know about it. And, you know, now that they know, they're actually, you know, on top of things. But for us, that's a concern because we're a small outfit.
Yeah, so DigitalOcean had on their blog information about this, and they were in the process of researching the patch, trying to figure out how they were going to deploy that. But again, as you said, companies like Google and Amazon are already patched because they were part of that inner circle. So a group of people got together, different companies, and they said, hey, here's what's going on with the vulnerability in the processor. Let's all collaborate. We'll make a patch, and then we'll let everybody know that this is there. And the idea was to give people time to create the patch, Microsoft, Linux, get the cloud stuff patched. And that way, when they release the information, some things are already fixed and there's a patch available.
Right. But the problem was is that rumors started running rampant and information started leaking. And they're like, we better say something because we don't want people to get blindsided by something terrible happening. So they released it, I believe, on the 4th officially.
Right. And companies like DigitalOcean were not part of that because they're smaller.
No. I mean, the big companies got told first.
Yeah. And the other thing that we need to point out, too, is that even though companies like Google and Amazon and Azure are all patched, what they're patching there is the underlying host operating system. So it would be like saying, I'm patching ESXi, or I'm patching KVM on Linux. That's the host operating system that provides you your virtualization. The Windows or Linux virtual machine that you manage yourself, you also have to patch that as well.
Right, because it's not going to be patched by the patches made by the big companies. So so then another thing we were taking a look at, we can minimize risk from Meltdown by, again, like we said before, patching. And we can minimize the risk from Spectre by logging off our browser sessions. But we also need to continue to do research on this because this is not going away. There's going to be more vulnerabilities when it comes to that. And one of the things that Jake said that I really liked, and it makes me have confidence that someday they're going to be fixing this, is that, you know, he said that the CPU attacks, we've known about them for the past decade. The problem is, the thing was, is that they were thought as being limited, and they kind of, most of the attacks, you had to have physical access to it. So they weren't really that big of a deal at the time. This is a big deal. Things have changed, and this is a big deal.
Right. And one of the things that we should point out here is that even if you patch, what you're doing is you're saying, okay, the patch comes in and separates kernel memory from user memory. So, for example, a user program cannot access kernel memory because the operating system is now designed in such a way that doesn't allow that to happen. But you also have to realize that the flaw is still in the processor itself.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to really fix that is to get a new processor that doesn't have the flaw, which they don't have yet.
They don't have yet. And then there was a problem with the antivirus. You want to tell us about that?
Oh, yes. So this is also something that you have to take into consideration. When you decide, or if you are going to use the patch, which at some point you probably should use the patch, you need to make sure that you are careful about how you apply the patch. Because, one, the patch doesn't really work well with certain antivirus software. Symantec is one of them. If you apply the patch before you update your Symantec antivirus, you may end up with a blue screen of death. So that's something you have to watch out for. Pay attention to your antivirus and how this affects or how this works with the patch. Second thing is you have to be aware that when you patch, there is going to be a performance hit on your system if you have an Intel processor that is affected by Meltdown. So one example that Jake gave, and I thought this was really good, is that if you have a server or a system that's running at, let's say, 90% CPU usage, the patch could introduce a performance hit of about 10%. So as soon as you patch, you're going to be at 100% CPU usage, and you may end up causing that server to crash.
Correct.
So now, you know, that's just another thing that you have to think about. And it goes back to what I said earlier. Make sure you understand what's going on before you do anything. Do your homework ahead of time.
That's where the don't panic comes into place, because like I said, I was panicking all on the inside until you started pointing out there isn't enough information. Everyone in security is saying, hey, we'll have to wait and see. You know, there are a couple of things that we can do to minimize risk or mitigate the risk. But at the end of the day, you don't want to do something in haste. And it's one of those things as IT professionals, you know, I listen to you guys and you're like, oh, you know, something happened. Ooh, a fire, put it out, you know, and you take care of the problem right then and there. This is one of the things that you can do that. And, you know, technology grows at a fast pace. And I think so will the attacks, and things are going to get more sophisticated where putting out the fire is no longer going to be an option. You're going to have to really, you know, get your hand, you roll up your sleeves like we did, you know, when it came to try to understand this. And I think the frustrating part for me was I understood bits and pieces, and we've given you, you know, a very small breakdown of what we understand. I mean, it's really limited. It's not, you know, this really big thing, because for me, I understood a little bit of it.
Yeah, and I didn't really understand a whole lot more because, you know, Jake went into, again, memory mapping and kernel space and pseudocode. He's somebody who understands processor architectures and programming and how those things work. So he actually understands how the actual attack is pulled off. He can write the code for that.
Yeah.
We have no idea how that works.
And you know, we didn't want to sit in here and try to explain to you how the attack was when we don't really understand it. That wouldn't, you know, do anybody any good. The thing that we liked, you know, we oversimplified the process just to help you understand the difference between one or the other.
Yeah. So in our case, the two things that I think are going to be really big for us. Inside the network, we don't really have to worry too much about the actual flaw itself. And a hacker coming in and taking advantage of that. We do have to worry about the browser exploit, because that's, you know, that's going to be something that is remote. We may go to a website that has malware on it, and now that Java piece is running on our system and seeing things it's not supposed to.
Correct.
So that's one thing that we do have to watch out for. The biggest issue I have with a lot of our systems, because like everybody else, what are we running? Intel processors. Right. So one of the things that I am going to be looking for is that performance hit. Now, we don't really do a whole lot in terms of processing a lot of data or using something that's accessing resources like crazy. And we're not, you know, our processors are not at 90% CPU usage. So the performance hit, we may not notice that, but we'll have to wait and see when we patch our systems to see what really does happen.
It'll be interesting how it would affect our jobs. I mean, you're in security and you're probably going to see a more detailed part of it. I think on my job, I'm going to probably see it more from a user point of view.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're in a situation where your company has large servers, they do a lot, processor usage is above 50%, those are situations in which you may see an issue with performance. I don't know. And until more people start applying the patch, we're really not going to know what those numbers look like. Like, oh my God, I saw a huge hit. We don't know yet if that's really the case.
Right.
Now, the other thing that we are going to have to worry about here at Section 9 is our DigitalOcean servers.
Correct.
Now, am I panicking about that? Not yet. And the reason why I'm not panicking about that yet is because DigitalOcean pointed out that they're using KVM. KVM is virtualization software that supposedly is not affected by Meltdown. So an attacker could not run a VM on their cloud server, access kernel memory and see our data on the host, because that was one of those rumors that came out.
Correct.
And so according to what we know now, on DigitalOcean, that's not possible.
Yeah, but my hesitation, and this is something I took from Jake's webinar, is that we know of.
That we know of.
Right, because right now it may be something that you can say, yeah, I don't think this can happen. But you cannot for sure say that it's not going to happen. Maybe, you know, that vulnerability has not come out yet. It's not obvious. Maybe somebody's sitting on it, or, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So, and this is why I think that we need to continue to do the research on this.
The other thing about our cloud servers that is also important to make note of is that we don't really have top secret data sitting on our cloud server.
Mm-hmm.
Most of that stuff's public information anyway. We have our DNS servers there in the cloud. We have our web server there in the cloud. It would be bad if they got hacked into and somebody did privilege escalation or saw things that we don't want them to see. But for the most part, that's public information anyway. So I'm not really worried about the data. I am worried about the service being compromised, and we have to go and rebuild that,
right?
Because it got hacked into. But overall, I think the risk level in that case is lowish, moderate, kind of. So I'm not panicking.
See, for my job, we have social security numbers. We have dates of birth. We have information that is critical. So I'm a little worried.
Right. So that's where...
But I'm not an IT there, so...
Yeah, and that's where you have to think about, what if somebody does privilege escalation on my DigitalOcean cloud server? In our case, not too big a deal.
Right.
In your case, now you're talking about servers that are inside the network, so there's a little bit of a difference there, but you do have information that belongs to other people, and you're storing that somewhere in the organization.
Well, and now we're going web-based. You know, our system, they're getting ready to make it web-based. So there's Spectre right there waiting.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's why we do the research. That's why we continue to do the research, because we don't know how this is going to impact the organization.
Yeah.
And this is a great learning experience for the both of us, because we're taking this opportunity to see, how does this apply to us here at Section 9? And how does this apply to our organizations that we work for?
Yeah, no. And I'm curious. I've been thinking about going to our IT department and saying, hey, what are you guys doing about this? And see if they're even aware, you know. I'm sure they are aware, but, you know, I don't know that they'll know what to do.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are not sure what to do just yet.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you want to say about this?
No, actually, like I said, I'm looking forward to continue to be on the lookout for the new information that is coming out and continue to do a risk mitigation in our system, just to get the practice and try to figure out, how does this affect, you know, Section 9, and what can we do?
And there's all kinds of interesting information about this, because it, you know, when we look at the processors, we say, okay, it's Intel, it's AMD, it's ARM.
ARM. Mm-hmm.
But there was something about the ARM processors that was a little goofy, because they said not all ARM processors are affected.
Yeah.
And then you brought up something. You said, Raspberry Pi affected? I don't know what to say about that. So that's why I think there's a lot of information that we still don't know yet.
Right.
And the researchers are going to have to do more work to really give us a bigger picture of what's really going on here.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of work to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of stuff in our show notes. So if you want to see that, you can go to section9.us. And then if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us.
And happy new year. And thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.